You're listening to the Tooth Sleuth Podcast. Hosted by Greg Essenmacher.
Welcome to the Tooth Sleuth Podcast, all about the business of dentistry. I'm Greg Essenmacher, your host, and I'm honored you've chosen to spend time with us as I speak with industry leaders on the dental landscape from their perspective. On today's episode, I'm excited to welcome my friend, Drew Phillips.
Hey, Greg.
Drew is one of the creators, and this happens sometimes. Drew is one of the creators and educators in the Associates on Fire program. You can find that at www.associatesonfire.com. And the host of the Associates on Fire podcast, yes, a fellow podcaster, which has guests from all across the dental and medical industry to discuss best business practices. You can find the Associates on Fire podcast on all major podcast streaming platforms. Drew provides CPA, business consulting, business and personal financial planning, and investment management services to privately owned dental and medical practice owners. Welcome, Drew. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Greg, thanks for having me. One quick clarification. We actually just recently switched the name of our podcast from the Associates on Fire podcast to the Dental Boardroom podcast, but the Associates on Fire website that Greg mentioned is still live, and that is still the right naming convention. But thank you again for having me on the show, Greg. I'm excited.
I love being corrected right out of the gate. This is going to be a great 30 minutes. I know my listening audience always likes to send messages to me on social media, you name it, private text message, be like, Greg, you're wrong. That's a click of one. So in the first 2 minutes, if I can be wrong, that's awesome. Thanks, Drew. Appreciate you pointing that out. And I mean, if you're a financial guy, right, you're detail oriented. You've got to find those little things. So thanks for that. No, Drew and I, just for the listening audience, Drew and I have been trying to connect to get him on my podcast here for a little bit. So I'm glad finally, because you know, his podcast is awesome. Please listen, please subscribe. And you can find all that information in the show notes, wherever you found this podcast to download. So Drew, one of the reasons that, you know, let's just dive right into it, right? So one of the reasons why I asked you to be on the show, you know, we're coming with blunt force trauma, very first question. So embezzlement, you know, it seems like every practice owner that I've talked to, when I say, hey, you know, you listen to my podcast, really appreciate that. So what is it that you want to hear about? What's a topic you want to hear about? You know, and it seems like to a person, they say, talk about embezzlement. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm going to have Drew on here pretty soon. So I'm going to talk about embezzlement. So tell me, what advice can you give to new dental practice owners, or even dental practice owners from a long time? What are some of the red flags? What are some of the simple things that they can look out for, you know, when it comes to embezzlement? Because I'm guessing you've probably seen it.
Yeah. And I'm going to give you hopefully a decent answer, but the fundamental truth is that if you have someone in your office who is a quality embezzler, skilled, done it before, and they know how to change the records in the right areas, it's quite hard and difficult, no matter how many checks and balances you have in place, to identify that and uncover it in real time. And so it does take some time for the embezzlement to sort of occur before you're able to catch it. That's if you're, you know, paying attention to it. And I would recommend doing an embezzlement protection sort of audit every maybe 3 to 5 years. And there are plenty of great dental specific embezzlement people out there. Prosperdent is one of them that I'm familiar with, at least. So anyway, so in terms of doing your best effort in your office to prevent embezzlement, having the right checks and balances in place should, at a minimum, create a situation where the staff are knowing that you're watching, knowing that you're, you know, paying attention. And that's a great form of protection in and of itself. So with that being said, day sheets and reconciling your day sheets is probably the most critical piece. And it's also going to help you with some other things to catch and make sure that your billing is complete, because each day is your best opportunity to remember what you actually did in that day for the completeness check. So what you're going to receive from your front office in that day sheet report is going to be the total production, adjusted production, if you're in network with insurance companies for that day. It's going to have it by provider, and then it's going to list all of the payments or collections received for that day by payment type. And then it should also have on there what was billed on that day. And so when you know what was billed and you know what was produced, then those two things should align nicely. Now, as I mentioned, what you produce, you're going to have the best idea of what that was the day that you do it. And so if you're combing through the production that's listed on that report and you know that you did a 2740 posterior crown, or you did three of them, but only two are listed, well, then that's your notification. That's your cue to let your billing team know that they've not recorded or have not billed for that particular procedure. So those are your checks and balances to make sure that what was produced is billed. And then to reconcile what was billed and what was collected, that's the next piece. So you're going to look at what was billed for the day. You're going to have an insurance portion and the patient portion. And the patient portion should ultimately have come through the practice if you're doing same day billing, which I would always recommend for everybody, is to estimate that patient portion at the time of service and have them pay either ahead of time before they, as they schedule the appointment, or on the date the services were performed. And then, so from there, you're going to reconcile the payments that you received from the patient portion pieces that you ultimately were supposed to collect on that day. And then you're also going to look at the insurance collections that came through the bank account that day, which are ultimately would have been recorded in the practice management software, hopefully that day as well. And so that you'll also be able to tie out those to past billings. So that's your complete sort of day sheet reconciliation process. And hopefully through that, you're identifying errors from potential billing misses from what you actually produced. And then you're also making sure that what was collected actually made it into your bank account.
Well, and I love what you say there, right? So it's top of mind. I mean, I ask me what I had for lunch yesterday and I'd have to go back into the memory bank and try to figure it out, right? Something that happens that day and looking at as a quick scan and saying, yes, this, and this happened. So tell me a little bit about, you know, some of the clients that you work with. You know, if it's a single practice, single provider, that's one thing. Being able to remember what you did yourself on that day at the end of the day, you know, checking off a list of each of the patients you saw and what procedures were accomplished, fairly simple. Talk to me a little bit now about when you get into multiple providers in a single practice and, you know, clients that you have like that. And tell me about the next step, which helps to take some of those precautions from things being missed, inaccurate billing and things of that nature.
So it's the same process. The only difference is that you're going to get help from the other producers to make sure that they reconcile or review what was recorded as production for themselves. And the same completeness check process that we just discussed, they're going to do that for themselves as well to make sure everything that they did has been recorded.
And so tell me a little bit about like how technology has helped this process or what tools that you provide for, you know, clients of yours to help make this a little more seamless. As somebody who doesn't know the intricacies of this type of work, it seems to me like this is a lot, right? But then again, you know, for those that are in a daily practice and, you know, I work mostly with full arch clinics and work on fee for service, it's pretty straightforward. You know, you do a $20,000, $25,000, $45,000 case, you send it over for financing. I mean, it'd be nice if they came in with cash, very rare, but you send it over for financing. I mean, it's pretty clear, you know, when you're doing, you know, a 4 or 5 hour surgery, that's pretty much the bulk of what you're doing, unless you're doing a morning and afternoon, right? Pretty straightforward. But what you're talking about seems to be a little more intricate. So share with our audience a little bit more about some of the tools and how technology can help that happen.
So vast majority of the practice management software systems that I'm aware of, they have this day sheet reconciliation report template already pre-programmed into the software itself. So printing and producing the report should be more or less straightforward. You may need to call tech support for your practice management software itself if there's information that you want that I just went over that's not being sort of standardized in that template. But from my experience, most of those practice management softwares have that feature. And then in really the day sheet reconciliation shouldn't take more than, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of your time. The bulk of the review is that completeness check that we spoke about earlier, because the billings relative to the collections should be a one-for-one comparison. So that's more or less just an eyeball test. Whereas the production, the completeness is really where the mental pressure comes in and remember what you did at 8 a.m. that morning.
Sure. Yeah. So one column equals the other column. Pretty straightforward looking at it. It's more of, you know, before I had that second cup of coffee, what was I doing with the very first patient? And if the schedule's right there in front of you too, what the schedule says was supposed to happen and what you actually did, there should be some recollection.
Absolutely.
With the patient's name and some recall, and hopefully that, you know, the assistant's still there. And if you have to, you know, lean on them and say, did we do this to number 16 or was it number 17? And did we end up, you know, that type of situation. So I love it. Well, let's back it out a little bit. So tell me, how does one like yourself, Drew, end up becoming inspired to be a dental CPA? You know, when you were 5 years old and, you know, bouncing around the backyard playing, you know, football with your buddies, did you say, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a dental CPA?
I think at that time I was probably never even been to a dentist. I don't know. But I think probably similar to most people in the industry to some extent, I kind of more or less fell into this industry. So I'll start with what my dream was as Greg mentioned, as a kid. And that dream was to either own a business or be a CEO or CFO of a prominent business. That was always more or less my goal from a young age. And in my college experience, you know, during my review of like, how does one give themselves the best chance to reach that goal? And becoming a CPA, I realized that, you know, roughly 90% of every CEO on a publicly traded stock exchange has or had their CPA license at some point in their career. So that's ultimately what positioned me in the accounting world. And then I took it a little bit further and I actually got a degree in finance and banking as well. And the finance and banking piece during that educational experience was really more exciting, right? And I didn't necessarily know that going into it, but finance, for everyone that doesn't necessarily know the distinction between finance and accounting, finance is more forward-looking, perspective, estimation, right? Whereas accounting is more historical and more of a recapture of what actually happened in the past. And you really can't be a good CFO or chief financial officer in the finance space if you don't have a good accounting arm that's tracking historical information, because a lot of the projected figures that you're going to be relying on are based on what's happened previously. And then you're layering in any expected changes. Maybe you are introducing orthodontic revenue that didn't exist before, and you have a certain estimate on how quickly you're going to be able to get that ramped up. And so that's not in the historical data, but you use the historical data plus what you expect to happen from the ortho revenue in this example to get a new or more accurate projection in place for the year and maybe for the next 2 to 3 years, depending on how forward-looking you are going to be. And then it's a process of always, you know, comparing your actual information to what you had projected, to see how, to see why there were variances, if there were, just as a part of that true up process, so that you can always be better on that next projection than you were on the previous one.
Yeah, I love that. And my listening audience is a really good mix, a good blend of clinicians and vendors, if you will. And the vendors will definitely know all about forecasting. And so what you're talking about is having, you know, a good balance as well of what you shared of the accounting piece, which is the historical looking back, right? What I love to say is what you don't track, you can't attack. And then knowing where there's some gaps of being able to add new revenue streams into a practice. You know, if you're doing, you know, singles or multiples of implants, can you do overdentures and full arch? If you're not doing clear aligners, is that a therapy you want to add? Or during economic downturns, which have been historical across the board for like general dentists, of what pieces to keep in-house or at least some of the simple procedures to be able to increase verticals of revenue within their practice. And it sounds like with the finance piece, that's the forward-looking forecasting. How can we add to the revenue, the total top-line gross productivity? And then, of course, how does it affect the bottom line? Right? The profitability of an individual practice or a client of yours. So tell me what that conversation looks like from your perspective, because it sounds like you sound a lot different from number crunchers, you know, that are just saying, here's the facts, because, you know, measuring is extremely critical and important. So tell me how you approach clients, say, differently, because you're already sounding differently from some of the people that I've spoken with that are in your vertical.
So we are a practice CFO. We are a goals-based financial planning firm, and we incorporate and integrate every financial component of your business and your personal life under one and into one ecosystem. And with that, if you are ultimately going to make good strategic decisions on what is best for your life, you have to start with the end in mind, right? I think that's the spirit of a goal-based planning firm. And with the end in mind is ultimately financial independence. And financial independence is unique to the person who's trying to obtain it. And I try to get people to forget about numbers and just have introspection and try to determine what it is that, where it is that you want to live, what neighborhood, what, where do you want your kids to go to school, both, you know, in undergrad and K through 12 and then also in college, and all of the, you know, lifestyle benefits that you want to have today and then also in retirement. And then once you are able to formulate that narrative, that story about your life, then you can, then we as CPAs and CFOs, we can translate that story or that narrative into production, into profitability, and then ultimately help chart a path to reaching that goal as quickly as possible. And so, and then from there, you know, the, if we're, you know, currently, if we have enough profits with the production that we're currently doing to meet that objective within the timeframe that is, you know, appealing to the client, well, great. It's not that we're not going to address future production increases. It's just, we've met that sort of base level needs for retirement projections. And so once you've met those base level needs, that's kind of step number one. Like goal number one, I would say, is break even the practice. Make sure the lights stay on. Goal number two, make sure that you can, you know, you have enough to meet your lifestyle needs today. Goal number three, make sure that you not only meet your lifestyle needs, but you can meet your future retirement needs. It's kind of the story I just went down. And then the fourth, once you've eclipsed those base level needs, well, now there's room to potentially have a hybrid approach with that extra, that every next dollar between investing in your future self or reinvesting back in the business, if that's still an area of opportunity, or investing in increased lifestyle, right? And that's really where, for me and my clients, where a lot of the fun starts to happen, because with, once you've met base level needs, you can start to potentially be a little bit more risky in the investments that you're pursuing, hopefully still adjusted for the return that you should be earning on that elevated level of risk. But there are more opportunities to explore those things with higher rates of return, because the truth is that that next dollar, while still important because you're working for it, isn't necessarily needed to get you to your end goal. And so that's kind of the process that we go through. And then once we have defined, you know, maybe we're, if we're short of our goals, then the process is trying to understand what can we do within this practice to be better. And that's where being dental specific and being ingrained in the operational components of what makes a dental practice successful and the various strategic options that you can take to make that practice successful, all of which have their pros and cons. And they all should be based on what ultimately is your vision for as a practice owner. And what Greg, you know, focuses on with his clients with full arch cases and sort of larger procedures is great, but that may not be for everybody. And the general, you know, and I think that those are those types of procedures, they are looked at as high producing, because they are. But, you know, the truth is a lot of my practice owners can have 50 to 55% operating income margins and never touch an advanced procedure in their career. And then, you know, and retire at 40 years old if they're starting as a practice owner at 29 to 30, right? So there are pathways without going down, you know, what is sort of more generalized as advanced dentistry and still be highly profitable and highly successful. And within that general dentistry practice, it could, you know, unlocking additional revenue could be ortho, as I mentioned before. It could be, you know, focusing on your hygiene department and getting your periodontal procedures at the right level based on the demographics in your area. And it could take on a whole host of other sort of operational efficiencies to be able to see more patients, right? And so we look in the details, and we call those leading indicators. Those are going to be buried in your practice management software. Those will never be in the lagging indicators, which is your CPA reports, your historical information. There will be some inferences that you can draw from historical reports, but ultimately, to make better actionable decisions, you've got to look within that data that's in the practice management software so that you can pinpoint areas that are being underserved and then ultimately could lead to future opportunity above what you're doing today. And so that's where we really, where we work with our practice owners to achieve their goals at that more granular practice management level.
Well, and I love what you're talking about. And what I love so much is that you really are describing what a customized solution based on the vision, the mission and vision of a particular owner or practice. You know, it's not a one size fits all, one shoe fits all. And thank goodness, because if every clinician, right, every dentist out there, and there's what, over 160,000, I believe, if they were all doing fixed full arch, nobody would be getting their teeth cleaned. And most of the practices that I work with, you know, a big chunk of their production is coming from the high ticket items, but it might be 20, 30, 40%, maybe even as high as 60%. There's one client that it's higher than that. But what about all the rest? And it's all the rest. It's really having a holistic approach of all the rest. And I may specialize and focus in one niche area, but once we're starting to make progress in that one area and really improving the dynamics of a practice, the profitability, the cash flow, inevitably they say, well, what else can we take a look at? And that's where partnering with others in the industry that do all the rest, it doesn't mean that it's less than, or even if they don't do the full arch, there is so much opportunity to be able to serve patients in a great way and serve themselves, right? Because of the comprehensive financial planning that you do. And that's the takeaway, at least that's what I'm hearing from you. And I'd love to hear that, because it's helping individuals to actualize being their own business owner and being able to understand and having, I think you called them leading indicators. Forgive me if that's, is that the phrase that you use?
Exactly, yeah.
Right, yeah. To be able to understand that there is some, you know, there's some signs within the practice that say where you can go and be most successful with that. I love that. So tell me, so what trends are you seeing that are really shaping the dental industry? Because I have more of a narrow focus, and it sounds like from the work that you do, it's a very broad focus of the industry in general. So I'd love to hear that and share with the audience, you know, some of the trends that you're seeing and, you know, maybe look around the corner a little bit. And what are some of the things that you're doing to help practices stay ahead of the curve?
Great question. Well, technology is always going to be on the forefront of change and new trends, and offices continue to get more digital, and the workflows become more automated. And as they become more digital, and the ability to take on new procedures becomes easier with that technology and the assistance that technology provides. And, you know, in terms of like key areas within technology, you know, having a scanner and then having your CBCT and CEREC and your 3D printer. I mean, you can print your own implant surgical guides, you know, so ultimately it's sort of facilitating this entire workflow that didn't necessarily exist, you know, 7-10 years ago. So that's really super helpful. And
every equipment vendor's ears just perked.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
And like, ding, ding, ding.
not to recan and make equipment suppliers not love me, but all those pieces of equipment aren't necessarily necessary, but they can be for success. And then other things in terms of treatment, you know, sleep and is obviously one area that is becoming more prevalent, I think, as the education within the patient market expands, that you're going to get even more adoption in addressing sleep issues. And dentists are, you know, some of the people on the front lines with this new procedure type. And then taking it further, so that's at the GP level. I mean, we've got sleep issues across the board, you know, for adults. And I think even maybe more importantly for the future of, you know, the United States and the next generation behind us is the kids. You know, we're addressing sleep issue needs at the pediatric dentist level through phase one and phase 1B orthodontic treatment. And, you know, through expanding the palate and, you know, fixing airway issues. And so, you know, hopefully preventing future adult sleep issues at the start, which is really phenomenal. And I'm super excited about that one piece in particular for our future generations. And then, so obviously that's going to be a new revenue line. It's already existing. There's people specializing in sleep in the dental space already. But as I mentioned, as education continues to grow and those workflows and those digital technology pieces continue to aid in the ability to do sleep, I definitely see that being a big revenue line for practices in the future.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you're sharing some of the, you know, behind the curtain, if you will, with our listening audience. I think that's important to bring that to the forefront for sure. Okay, so Drew, this is the part of the podcast where all of my guests get to play a little something, and it's called What the Sleuth is Going On? All right, so it's three rapid fire questions. It's the very first thing that comes top of mind. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
Okay. What's the worst bad breath experience you've ever encountered?
Wow. Let's think about this.
First thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Thinking.
I'm gonna have to go with the dental office experience that I had when I was like just out of college. I remember someone coming in and just, you know, getting in my mouth, but no, at this point, COVID has not happened yet. And so there was this face mask was not on, and he's, you know, a couple inches from my face. And I think morning breath has got the best of him that day, but that's probably one of my worst experiences there.
I can see Drew's face for the listening audience. It had to have been pretty bad. Okay. Question number two, if you could change one thing about your smile, what would it be?
Great question. Well, I do think about this quite often, so I have an answer for you. If I were to fix my smile, one of my front teeth, I would like to maybe push the gum line up slightly to make it more even with the other front tooth. And then potentially one of my front teeth, just using some Invisalign to fix the curvature of it, because I didn't wear my retainer as I was told to do. So those are probably the two things that I would fix the most. And more recently, the smaller teeth next to the main front two teeth, and I should know the name of that, but I don't. I had one that was shorter than the other, and I was thinking I was going to need a veneer or a composite veneer. And my dentist actually was able to do just a composite on top of the pre-existing tooth structure, similar to almost like a composite veneer, fixed it without changing the tooth structure, which was really important for me in my experiences with my family and some of the experiences that they had with their mouths growing up. And I always wanted to maintain my tooth structure as long as I could. And so that was really fortunate. I thought that she did an amazing job. And just that small few millimeters that she added on there with the composite material really changed what I felt like the entire look and feel of my smile. So I really loved that. It was really cool.
Nice. And I think it's called a lateral incisor. And
there we go.
My dentist friends are going to light me up if that's wrong. And if it is, again, that would be mistake number two. Although if you're listening closely, I've stumbled over words a few times. And I know that my producer, Ted, isn't going to like save me on those by editing out the hiccups. Okay, good. I appreciate you sharing that. Do you know any dentists, by the way, that can help you like with the tooth lengthening, the root lengthening?
I did. I did go to a periodontist to have him give me a quote. And at some point I will. For sure.
I'm teasing. I said, do you know any dentists?
Oh, got it. No, do you know any?
And question number three, if you could go back and be the inventor of any dental product, which one would you choose and why?
Oh, this one's so easy for me. So when you get you're getting your teeth cleaned and you have a hygienist in there, we don't want to have an assistant in there too the whole time doing suction. That's annoying, right? It's an extra expense we don't need. And so this little leaf that they put on the end of the suction tube that sits in the corner of your mouth and just, you know, continuously applies the perfect amount of suction, allows one operator, one producer to do the whole thing without the need of someone else doing the suction, which I thought was ingenious. And we're talking about a little plastic tip, right? Mm-hmm. So it's easy to produce at scale, manufacture at scale. The cost of production is extremely low and everybody loves it. Great idea.
And isn't it amazing that sometimes the simplest things you're like, why didn't I think of that? Or I thought of that. Why didn't I do that? Drew, there's been a couple of them that have come up like that during our podcast here on the Tooth Sleuth podcast, where it's been like, wait, don't edit that out. That was a really good idea. Don't share that. So, but that one's already been invented. So we don't have to worry about that too much. No, I mean, it's been a great conversation. I love you answering those questions as well. So tell me, Drew, in the last few minutes here, because I want to respect your time before we wrap up. So when you first engage a client, how is it that one can best know when it's like, you know what, I probably should reach out for some help at this point? What's their telltale signs to say, you know, maybe at least reach out and ask a few questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we try to make asking questions as frictionless as possible for potential future clients, you know, and we do spend quite a bit of time sort of reviewing your numbers with you and kind of giving you our thoughts on where you are currently and what we think is possible within, you know, a short, intermediate, and long-term perspective. And I think through those conversations, you know, even if you don't decide to work with us, hopefully there was some really key information that you can take away and run with on your own. And so we don't want anybody to feel like they can't reach out and get information. We don't charge for that, right? It's just an exploratory process. Get to know people, get to know their situation, and share a little bit about us.
Excellent. And my guest today has been Drew Phillips from Associates on Fire. And Drew, so share with our listening audience, and I'll make sure I include it with the show notes. How can somebody get in contact with you? What's the best and easiest way?
Yeah. So Associates on Fire is our educational-based platform garnered towards new and early-stage dentists. It is a great platform, completely free. Our core business, though, is called Practice CFO. And you can go to practicecfo.com. You can go to Pick Your CFO team page. And then you can go to Team Financial Fitness, where you're going to find myself and a lot about my team and how we operate. And then you can get in contact with me directly through the link on that page. You will be prompted to a Calendly link where you can schedule a time to chat with me and learn more about myself and obviously vice versa.
And we found another mistake. Practice CFO, you did tell me again. And unless you've changed it, for all my listening audience, go to Practice CFO. And go to that page where you get to pick your CFO and look at the picture of Drew, because he's got this great picture, this action shot. It's like he's in the middle of pointing at you like, I pick you. Is it still the same picture, Drew?
That's the same one.
Okay, you got to go and check out the picture for no other reason, because it's a really cool picture and I love it. And it really shares his personality. And for as long as I've known Drew, he definitely comes through, not only in the picture, but also in person. Drew, thank you so much for being a part of the program. I appreciate you being on today.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Tooth Sleuth podcast, sponsored by G&A Consult, helping dentists and dental professionals maximize their potential. From vision to execution, creating business strategies that work. Reach out to the show to get more information. Signing off for now, I'm Greg Essenmacher. I thank you for your time and the pleasure of your company. And remember to keep smiling.
This podcast was produced by T-Door Productions. Theme song written by The Whole Other.